And good afternoon.
You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show, coming to you from our studios in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, this is August 4th, the 216th day of the year. Leap year is 217th day. In the Gregorian calendar, 149 days remain until the end of the year. And on this date, there's been a lot of interesting things happen in history. In the year 598, the Emperor Wendi of Sui orders his youngest son, Yang Ying, assisted by the co-prime minister, Gao Jiang, to conquer what we know as Korea during the Manchurian rainy season with a Chinese army and a navy. 1265, the Battle of Evesham. The army of Prince Edward, the future King Edward I of England, defeats the forces of the rebellious barons led by Simon de Montfort, 6th Earl of Leicester, killing de Montfort and many of his allies. They did not have a good day. 1327, First War of Scottish Independence. James Douglas leads a raid into Weardale and almost kills Edward III of England. 1578, Battle of Al-Kashir al-Kabir. The Moroccans defeat the Portuguese. King Sebastian of Portugal is killed in the battle, leaving his uncle, Cardinal Henry, as his heir. And this, of course, initiates a succession crisis in Portugal. I mean, who wants a cardinal on the throne? 1693, the date traditionally ascribed to Dom Perignon's invention of champagne. It's not clear whether he actually invented champagne, but he's been credited as an innovator who developed the techniques that are used to perfect sparkling wine. 1701, the Great Peace of Montreal between New France and First Nations is signed. First Nations are the Native Americans. 1704, War of Spanish Succession. Gibraltar is captured by an English and Dutch fleet commanded by Admiral Sir George Rooke and allied with Archduke Charles. 1783, Mount Asama erupts in Japan, killing about 1,400 people. The eruption caused a famine that results in an additional 20,000 people dying. 1789, in France, members of the National Constituent Assembly take an oath to end feudalism and abandon their privileges. Now, you know that was not done voluntarily. I mean, up until that point, under the feudalism system, if you didn't like somebody and wanted to kill them, be my guest. 1790, newly passed Tariff Act creates the Revenue Cutter Service. That was the forerunner of the Coast Guard. 1791, a Treaty of Sestova signed, ending the Ottoman-Habsburg Wars. 1796, French Revolutionary War. Napoleon leads the French Army of Italy to victory in the Battle of Lonato. 1821, Saturday Evening Post is published for the first time as a weekly newspaper. 1854, the Homer Ruse establishes the official flag to be flown from Japanese ships. 1863, Matica Slovenska. Slovakia's public law, cultural, and scientific institution focusing on topics around the Slovak nation is established in Martin. 1873, American Indian Wars. While protecting a railroad survey party in Montana, the 7th Cav under Lieutenant Colonel George Custer clashes for the first time with the Cheyenne and Lakota people near the Tongue River. Only one man on each side is killed. 1889, the Great Fire of Spokane, Washington, destroys 32 blocks of the city, which leads to a mass rebuilding project. 1892, the father and stepmother, Lizzie Borden, are found murdered in her Fall River, Massachusetts home. She was tried and convicted for the crimes a year later. 1914, in response to the German invasion of Belgium, Belgium and the British Empire declare war on Germany. The U.S. immediately says it's neutral. 1915, the German 12th Army occupies Warsaw during the Gorlice-Tarnow Offensive and the Great Retreat of 1915. 1924, diplomatic relations between Mexico and the Soviet Union are established. 1936, Prime Minister of Greece, Ioannis Metaxas, suspends Parliament and the Constitution and establishes the 4th of August regime. 1944, the Holocaust. A tip from a Dutch informer leads the Gestapo to a sealed-off area in an Amsterdam warehouse where they find and arrest Anne Frank, her family, and four others. 1946, an earthquake of 8.0 magnitude hits Northern Dominican Republic. 100 are killed and 20,000 are left homeless. 1947, a Supreme Court of Japan is established. Till that point in time, the Emperor was the Supreme Court. 1964, civil rights worker Michael Swerner, Andrew Goodman, and James Cheney are found dead in Mississippi after disappearing on June 21st. 1964, second Gulf of Tonkin incident. The U.S. destroyers USS Maddox and USS Turner Joy mistakenly report coming under attack in the Gulf of Tonkin. Now, how do you mistake being under attack? You either are or you aren't. It's like being a little bit pregnant. 1965, Constitution of the Cook Islands comes into force, giving the Cook Islands self-governing status within New Zealand. 1969, at the apartment of French intermediary Jean Santini in Paris, American Representative Henry Kissinger and North Vietnamese Representative Nguyen Thu began secret peace negotiations. Eventually, these negotiations fail. 1974, a bomb explodes in the Italicus Express train at San Benedetto Val di Sambro, Italy, killing 12, wounding 22. 1975, the Japanese army takes more than 50 hostages at the AIA building, housing several embassies in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. Among the hostages are the U.S. consul and the Swedish charge of affairs. The gunmen win the release of five imprisoned comrades, and they all fly off to Libya to live happily ever after. 1977, U.S. President Jimmy, I'm Wonderful, Tell Me I Am, Carter signs legislation creating the United States Department of Energy. 1984, the Republic of Alta Volta, Upper Volta, changes its name to Burkina Faso. 1987, the Federal Communications Commission rescinds the Fairness Doctrine, which had required radio and television stations to present controversial issues fairly. I mean, under the Fairness Doctrine, CNN would have been out of business a long time ago. 1995, Operation Storm begins in Croatia. 2006, a massacre is carried out by Sri Lankan government forces. Kills 17 employees at a French Ingo Action Against Hunger. 2007, NASA's Phoenix spacecraft is launched. In 2019, 9 people are killed and 26 injured in a shooting in Dayton, Ohio. This only comes 12 hours after another mass shooting in El Paso, Texas, where 23 people are killed. And that's the one I mentioned yesterday. He took our parking spot when we left. Had we not have left, I would have probably questioned a man wearing ear protection and carrying a rifle walking across the parking lot. But then again, maybe I would have ignored him like everybody else. Holidays and observances, Christian Feast Day, Aristarchus, Eupronius, Blessed Frederick Jansuni, John Vianney, Maula, Venerius of Split, Sithney, patron saint of mad dogs. Coast Guard Day in the U.S., Constitution Day in the Cook Islands. That's the first Monday in August, actually. Matica Slavinska Day in Slovakia. Revolution Day in Burkina Faso. And Barack Obama Day in the United States of America. Now, why that man would have a day named after him is anybody's guess. Let's see what other dates we got. 1558, the first printing of Zohar, the Jewish Kabbalah. 1821, the Russian Antarctic expedition led by Fabian Gottlieb von Bellinghausen returns to Kronstadt after becoming the first to circumnavigate Antarctica. 1942, the first train with Jews departs Mechelen, Belgium to Auschwitz. Okay. And in 2015, Miss Piggy and Kermit the Frog announced end of their relationship on Twitter. It's the Queen Mother's birthday. That's Queen Elizabeth's mother. I met the lady. Very nice. We met at a museum. She didn't say, smiled a lot, didn't say much. 1181, supernova SN1181 in the constellation Cassiopeia, observed by Chinese and Japanese astronomers. 1347, English troops conquer Fort Calais. 1351, a sea battle at Zwartewalau. Wilhelm V beats Hokesen and the English. 1578, the Battle of Alcazar Quiver. The Moroccans defeat the Portuguese. Over 10,000 are killed. 1666, hurricane hits Guadeloupe, Martinique, and St. Christopher. Thousands die. That same year, sea battle between Netherlands and England. 1730, Crown Prince Frederick of Prussia escapes to England. 1735, the jury acquits John Zegner of the New York Weekly Journal, charged with seditious libel by Royal Governor of New York. That was the first victory for freedom of the press. 1753, George Washington becomes a master mason. 1772, English poet and artist William Blake, 14 years old, first apprentice to engraver John Bassiri in London. 1777, retired British cavalry officer Philip Astley establishes his riding school with performances in London. This was the precursor of the circus. 1824, Battle of Kos is fought between the Turks and the Greeks. 1830, plans for the city of Chicago are laid out. They got to get the shooting angles right. 1855, John Bartlett publishes Familiar Quotations. 1862, the U.S. government collects its first income tax. Now, the taxes they collected then and the one they collected in 1914 were supposed to be temporary taxes to fund the war. But they discovered just how much money they could squeeze out of the citizens, so they made it permanent. 1864, land and naval action in New Brazos, Santiago in Texas. 1870, the British Red Cross Society forms. 1879, Pope Leo XIII publishes encyclical Aeterna Patris. 1886, Colombia adopts the Constitution. Now, very few people know that Lizzie Borden was actually a Sunday school teacher. 1897, Henry Rucker, appointed collector of internal revenue for Georgia. 1900, an Allied expeditionary force made up of Japanese, Russian, British, French, and American troops set off from Tientsin for Peking to put down the Boxer Rebellion. 1914, World War I, German army shoots Belgian priest and burns down the village of Batiste. That'll teach you to be rude. 1914, German fleet under Admiral Suchon fire on the Algerian coast. 1914, King Albert I becomes supreme commander of the Belgian army after the German declaration of war. Also in 1914, Field Marshal Lord Kitchener becomes the British Minister of War after British declaration of war on Germany. He died mysteriously on board a ship that sank. 1916, Denmark cedes Danish West Indies, including the Virgin Islands, to the U.S. for $25 million. 1916, the Turks attack the British line at Romani in northern Sinai. In 1917, Pravda calls for the killing of all capitalist priests and officers. That's the Russian newspaper, don't you know? 1918, Adolf Hitler receives the Iron Cross First Class for bravery on the recommendation of his Jewish superior, Lieutenant Hugo Guttmann. 1919, the Rodin Museum opens in Paris in the Hotel Biron, containing works left to the state by the sculptor Auguste Rodin. 1919, Hungarian communist leader Béla Kun flees to Vienna after the Hungarian Soviet Republic is overthrown by the Romanian army. 1925, U.S. Marines leave Nicaragua after a 13-year occupation. 1929, 60,000 SA and SS march by Munich. 1930, child labor laws are established in Belgium. 1936, American athlete Jesse Owens wins his second gold medal at the Berlin Olympics, beats German Luz Long in the long jump final with an Olympic record. Jesse Owens' performance upset Hitler no end. 1941, Winston Churchill departs on board the Prince of Wales to come to the U.S. 1942, British Premier Winston Churchill arrives in Cairo. 1942, Colonel General Jeremenko arrives in Stalingrad and is welcomed by Nikita Khrushchev. He was the Soviet First Secretary at the time. 1942, German occupier orders all Dutch homing pigeons killed. 1943, British Premier Winston Churchill travels on the Queen Mary to Canada. 1943, U.S. Army Air Force bombs Germans in Troina. 1944, I mentioned Anne Frank had been arrested in Amsterdam by German secret police based on a tip-off from an informer who has never, ever been identified. 1952, gambling boss Theodore Rowe is murdered by the crew of Sam Giancana. 1955, Eisenhower authorizes $46 million for the construction of CIA headquarters. 1962, Nelson Mandela captured by South African police. 1970, Jim Morrison arrested for drunkenness. He identified himself as a poet and a rocker. In 1971, the U.S. launches first satellite into lunar orbit from a manned spacecraft. 1972, Arthur Bremer jailed for 63 years after shooting Alabama Governor George Wallace. I met him. He was an interesting character. All right. I think we have covered all the major things. Oh, one thing I did want to make mention. Today in Beirut, there was a massive explosion in a warehouse on the waterfront. A mushroom cloud is reported to have arisen. Quite a number of people killed and quite a number injured. Nobody seems to know exactly what it was that blew up, but mushroom cloud, that is a hint, I would say. All right. It's also 100 degrees outside. If you wonder why periodically you hear me drinking something, we just got back from a run out to the local military post, and it was hot, very hot. All right, let's talk about one of the most famous feuds in history. The Hatfields and the McCoys. Now, the Hatfields, who were headed by Anderson Devil Anse Hatfield, lived on the West Virginia side of a particular stream. And the McCoys, whose patriarch was Randolph Old Ranald McCoy, lived on the Kentucky side. Well, during the Civil War, the Hatfields sided with the Confederacy and the McCoys sided with the Union. In 1880, relations took a turn for the worse when McCoy's daughter became pregnant by Devil Anse's son, John's, and went across the river to live unmarried with the Hatfields. In those days, that was considered living in sin. Now, in 1882, Randolph's son, Tolbert, stabbed Devil Anse's brother, Ellison, in a brawl. And when Ellison died a few days later, the Hatfields retaliated by tying three of the McCoy brothers to some bushes and executing them. Well, the McCoys struck back one night in 1888. A group of Hatfields surrounded old Ronald McCoy's house. He was away from home at the time and ordered the occupants to come out and surrender. Well, when nobody came out, they set the house on fire. Old Ronald's daughter and son ran out of the house, and both were shot and killed. Now, this last attack was so brutal, officials in both Kentucky and West Virginia finally felt compelled to get involved. One Hatfield who participated in the raid was convicted and hung for the crime. Several others sentenced to long prison terms. With most violent offenders behind bars, the rest of the Klan members, tired from years of killing, the feud kind of petered out, but every so often it fires back up. Well, let's talk about some more proof that crime really doesn't pay. Residents of a port in, we talked about that one yesterday. Let's talk about a Cinderella story. Now, a thief in Severino, Brazil, stole a woman's purse and ran off. During his run, he put the purse strap on in his mouth and dialed his cell phone. Well, for some reason, when he tried to talk, he forgot he had the strap in his mouth, and the purse fell on the ground, and he scooped it up, but he left something else behind. His dentures. A witness found him and gave him to the police, and the brief investigation led officers to the home of Milton Cesar de Jesus, 34, trying to keep his mouth shut. He was ordered to try on the dentures, and they fit perfectly, so he was arrested. I mean, I guess you could say that was possibly taking a bite out of crime. I'm not sure. Well, let's talk about William Henry King, who grew up poor in the mid-1800s in Ontario, Canada. But he went on to become a doctor after his marriage to Sarah Lawson in 1855. Her wealthy father paid his way through medical school. Now, the future seemed wide open for the newlyweds till King let his true nature show after the birth of his first child. Their daughter was born handicapped. Well, that's okay, but she died after a month. Sarah suspected King of killing the baby and fled to her parents' house. Now, he managed to win her back, and he built a successful medical practice, and then, for whatever reason, started an affair with a woman named Melinda Vandervoort. William told Melinda that Sarah was ill and was going to die soon. Well, sure enough, she came down with a sudden case of cholera. King treated her with a powdered white medicine, but unfortunately, within a month, Sarah Lawson was dead. Sarah's father was no slouch, so he organized an investigation into her death, and King panicked and fled with Vandervoort to a farm in New York, but authorities eventually tracked him down. Well, the murder trial was a circus, as you might imagine. A professor from Toronto testified he discovered 11 grams of arsenic in Sarah's stomach, and a jury convicted King of murder. In Ontario's last public hanging, the doctor was trotted out in front of 10,000 spectators. Before the noose was tightened, King apparently had a touch of conscience. He confessed to the crowd that he did it. So he went to his grave believing God forgiven him for his crime. Well, if anybody offers you powdered white medicine, that's the color of arsenic. Well, of all of history's unsolved mysteries, none is probably stranger than the last voyage of the Mary Celeste. Well, November 5th, 1872, a ship named the Mary Celeste set sail from New York bound for Genoa, Italy, under the command of Captain Benjamin Briggs. On board were a crew of seven, along with the captain's wife and their two-year-old daughter. A month later, on the morning of December 4th, the Mary Celeste sailed out of the fog off the coast of Spain and was spotted by the crew of the British ship De Gracia. The Mary Celeste sails were raised, and the hull and the mast appeared to be in good order. Crew of the De Gracia hailed the ship but didn't get any answers, so they boarded her and found the ship completely deserted. The ship's cargo, 1,700 barrels of alcohol, was untouched. The money box was full, plenty of food and water. In fact, some reports talk about finding a meal sitting on the tables of dinner just been served. Toys were found on the captain's bed as if his little daughter had just played with them. Everybody's clothes were still on board. Only things missing were nautical charts and maps, a lifeboat, and all the people. So you got to ask yourself, where'd everybody go? Well, the mysterious disappearance of the Mary Celeste crew had people all over the world just scratching their heads. Some believed the crew mutinied, murdered the captain and his family, and took the ship. But if that was true, why did the mutinous crew abandon ship? Another suggestion was pirates attacked the ship and killed everybody on board. But if that's the case, why was nothing stolen? Well, the most unusual explanation offered was that the ship had been attacked by a giant squid. But if that's the case, a squid wouldn't have been interested in the ship's papers, and it wouldn't have needed a lifeboat. And there would have been more damage than just the people disappearing. Well, the mystery of the Mary Celeste has puzzled people for over 100 years. In all that time, according to experts, only one reasonable explanation has been proposed. According to this theory, four things had to happen in succession. One, the captain had to die of natural causes while the ship was caught in bad weather. Two, a crew member misread the depth of the water in the hole and everybody thought the ship was sinking. Now, in the days of wooden ships, every ship took on water in the hole. 3, they panicked and abandoned ship in a hurry, and they took no food or water. They also didn't tie the lifeboat to the main ship, so when the wind hit the sails, the ship just sailed away. And 4, everybody in the lifeboat eventually starved and drowned, and then the lifeboat sank. So the question is that what happened? If it was, nobody will ever know. You know, there are stories about a secret underground network of people who produce, collect, and enjoy what are called snuff films. These are films that depict actual murders. In 1969, Charles Manson and his family were terrorizing Los Angeles with bloody murders and other violent crimes. At one point, according to the story, they stole an NBC news truck known to be in possession of a few Super 8 cameras. In a 1971 documentary, The Family, filmmaker Ed Sanders claims that Manson's father has used the equipment to make brutality films of their victims. Rumors of various serial killers recorded their crimes as police discovering these tapes, of course, have surfaced over the years. Now, no law enforcement agency in the United States, Europe, or Asia has ever actually discovered a genuine snuff film, or at least they've never admitted they did. Very convincing fakes have been reported and turned over to authorities. In fact, in 1991, actor Charlie Sheen saw a Japanese movie called Flower of Flesh and Blood that was so convincing he thought it was real and gave it to the FBI. But according to the best information available, a real one is yet to surface. As for the Manson tapes, these are legend as well. The Super 8 cameras and the NBC equipment was later recovered, and they didn't report finding any films of murders. Now let's turn to the story that has been referred to as the story of the Kinky Killer Colonel. In 2007, Colonel David Williams was a loving husband and respected member of the Canadian Armed Forces. His interest in jogging photography, though, fed a hidden perversion. During his runs, it seems, he would spy on the neighbors. Over time, his behavior escalated. He broke into neighbors' homes and photographed himself wearing the girls' underwear. In fact, he built up quite a large collection of women's underwear and a collection of photos of himself wearing that underwear. Well, in 2009, his behavior became a little bit more violent. He broke into a woman's home near his cottage in Tweed, knocked her out with a flashlight, assaulted her, took pictures of her and himself with her underwear. Later on in 2009, his violent behavior became more extreme. Broke into the house of a woman who worked at his base and murdered her. When the body was found, Williams sent her father a letter of condolence. In 2010, Williams kidnapped a young woman on a highway and killed her. Then he dumped her body in the woods. Next day, he piloted a troop flight to California. Well, investigating officers had a copy of the tire print left behind near the victim's house. When Williams pulled through a checkpoint, one officer noticed that his tires matched the photo of the tire print perfectly. So he was brought in for questioning, and after 10 hours, he finally confessed. Well, after he signed a full confession, wrote his wife a note apologizing for his behavior. He was given 2 life sentences for murder, plus 120 years. Well, you know, the best nurses display compassion and empathy when dealing with patients. Jane Toppin, a nurse in New England in the late 19th century, was something else again. This cold-hearted caretaker admitted to killing 31 patients in her care over the course of several decades. Some suspect the actual victim count was much higher. Her murderous methods of poisoning, specifically by using atropine, a drug derived from the deadly nightshade, and morphine, and her victims ranged from those in hospitals to elderly patients who hired her as an in-home private nurse. Now we'll point out that atropine is also used for those who get exposed to nerve gas. In fact, we had to, we were issued, when I was on active duty, injection pens with atropine. Her undoing came after four members of the Davis family died within weeks of each other in 1901, all after having been treated by Taupin. The husband of one of these victims, Mary Gibbs, insisted on an autopsy, which revealed deadly levels of morphine and atropine in her system. During Taupin's trial, which unearthed the fact her father and sister had spent time in insane asylum, she didn't help her case. She reportedly claimed in open court, "That is my ambition, to have killed more people, more helpless people than any man or woman who's ever lived." Well, unsurprisingly, she was found to be insane herself and spent the rest of her life in the Taunton Insane Hospital, where she passed away at the age of 84. No report on who her nurse was at the time of her death. Well, sometimes you don't really know your technology. Bud and Jan wanted a Cadillac. They wanted a specific Cadillac sold by an Independence, Missouri dealership. They just didn't want to pay for it. Since stealing one was the only way they knew to get it, they stole the very sweet model equipped with the OnStar navigation system. Not only could OnStar tell them how to get places, it could also let the dealership know where the stolen vehicle was being taken. But Bud and Jan, who by all indications done their research on the make model of car which they were stealing, and were prepared shortly after they stole the car. They ripped out the car's antenna, and that silenced the onboard tracking system. Or at least they thought they had. What they actually had done was rip out the antenna for the Cadillac's XM satellite radio service. So while the Cadillac can no longer get dozens of channels of CD-quality musical entertainment beamed to it from the vacuum of space, it could still rat on Bud and Jan. Which is what it did, and which is how police tracked down Bud and Jan later that same day. David Klutz, executive manager of the dealership from which the Caddy had been stolen, summed up Bud and Jan's problem in the local newspaper. "They're like most people who commit stupid crimes. They didn't know what they were doing, but the car did." Well, on June 28, 1914, Gravello Princip shot and killed the heir to the Austro-Hungarian throne, Archduke Franz Ferdinand and his wife Sophie in Sarajevo, Bosnia. That assassination caused a chain reaction of events that within 5 weeks led to the start of World War I. Now, the gun that he used was a Browning semi-automatic pistol, model M1910. Serial number was 19074. Now, Princip, who was only 19 at the time he carried out the assassination, was a member of the Serbian nationalist group called the Black Hand. He fired 7 shots into the royal couple's car from 5 feet away, and then he tried to shoot himself. But he was interrupted in that endeavor by passersby and arrested. He died in prison of tuberculosis in 1918, and his illness is part of why he took on the mission of killing the Archduke. After his trial, the pistol was presented to Father Anton Puntigam, the Jesuit priest who had given the Archduke and Duchess her last rites. He planned to put it in a museum, but when he died in 1926, the gun vanished for almost 80 years. In 2004, a Jesuit community house in Austria made a startling announcement. They had found the gun used by Princip to assassinate the Archduke and his wife. It was verified by its serial number, and they donated it to the Vienna Museum of Military History in time for the 90th anniversary of the assassination that started a war that would kill 8.5 million people. Also in the museum are the car in which the couple were riding, the bloodied pillow on cover on which the Archduke rested his head while dying, and petals from a rose that was attached to Sophie's belt. All that would be needed to make it perfect would be exhume the bodies and put them in the museum as well. Well, sometimes history repeats itself. And though they took place nearly 100 years apart, the murder trials of O.J. Simpson and Lizzie Borden do have some eerie similarities. Both defendants were well-respected members of society. I mean, Lizzie was a Sunday school teacher. O.J. was a television actor, spokesperson. Neither Borden nor Simpson had a criminal record, and the grisly nature of the murder shocked the nation. In both cases, the defendants were kept incarcerated throughout the trial because in Borden's case, the judge said she's probably guilty, and in Simpson's case, because there's sufficient cause to believe this defendant is guilty. Both sets of victims were a man and a woman who were savagely murdered with a sharp object that was never found. And though both defendants later claimed the real murderers were vagrants, the grisly nature of the killings led investigators to conclude the heinous acts were personal. Neither defendant had a good alibi, and there were no witnesses to the murders. And both defendants are wealthy enough to hire the best and most expensive defense teams available. A guilty conviction was avoided in both cases, not by proving the defendant's innocence, but by poking holes in the prosecutor's case and establishing reasonable doubt. And both defense teams shifted the blame from the murderers to the police force, who they claimed are trying to frame the accused. And neither police force helped their case by sloppily botching each respective crime scene. Both juries reached their not guilty verdicts in a very short time. 1 hour for Borden, 4 hours for Simpson. And both cases spawned a famous rhyme. In the case of Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks, and when she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41. And in the case of O.J. Simpson, if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. And both cases remain unsolved to this day. And O.J. is looking for the murderer of his ex-wife on every golf course in the country. Well, in 2013, the Netherlands shut down 19 of the country's prisons. You might wonder about that until you realize the reason they did it was they didn't have enough prisoners to fill them. Well, let's talk about the murder of Harvey Milk, the first openly gay person elected to the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. And he was instrumental in the passage of San Francisco's first civil rights ordinance for gay citizens. And was politically a buddy-buddy with the mayor, George Moscone. Well, their nemesis was Dan White, a conservative ex-cop, and the only member of the board to vote against the civil rights ordinance. In fact, White was so incensed by the passage of the ordinance, he resigned from the board. And when he tried to get himself reinstated, he met a brick wall. On November 27, 1978, inside City Hall, he shot and killed both Harvey Milk and Mayor George Moscone. Yeah, everybody expected a first-degree murder conviction. Certainly it's premeditated. But the verdict came down as manslaughter. Part of Dan White's defense was brilliant. It centered on his instability due to eating too much junk food. Well, this decision was followed by gay riots. And the riots were answered by the San Francisco Police Department with an unprovoked attack on the city's gay neighborhood, the Castro District. Dozens of people were injured, and a particular bar known as the Elephant Walk was nearly destroyed. And out of this came the infamous Twinkie defense. Carmen Parlance for somebody who suffered from a diminished mental capacity due to consumption of too much sugar. Dan White was actually paroled in 1985. Committed suicide shortly after he got out, or at least they call it suicide. Well, there's a lot to be said for video games. They can be fun. But for some gamers, fun gets a little bit out of hand. In 2005, Robert Boyd went into a lingerie store and asked for a discount on some women's underwear. When the clerk refused to give him the discount, he pulled out a knife and robbed a place. Now, Boyd was later caught and went to trial. And at the trial, he blamed his crime on the Shadowrun, an online role-playing game that takes place in a magical future. In that world, Boyd explained, he's an elf criminal named Buho. And it was Buho who was in control during the crime. Well, the prosecutor called Boyd's story a big lie, saying he had an underwear fetish and invented Buho as an excuse. Well, after deliberations, the jury agreed and sentenced Boyd and Buho both to 2 years in prison. Well, in 2009, Alfred Hightower thought he's home free. He was a fugitive wanted in Indiana on drug dealing charges, but he had fled to Canada 3 years earlier. But Hightower's other hobby, the online game known as the World of Warcraft, allowed authorities to track him down online. They subpoenaed Warcraft's publisher, Blizzard Entertainment, for Hightower's IP address, screen name, account history, and billing address. With all this information in hand, he was arrested and extradited back to the U.S. Turns out World of Warcraft ratted him out. Well, you know, the future is encroaching more and more on the present. Unmanned aerial craft, or UAVs as they're called, manufacturers are peddling their wares to law enforcement agencies, and those law enforcement agencies are very interested. Privacy and death by falling robot concerns aside, drones promise clear crime-stopping benefits, improved surveillance, 24/7 aerial search efforts, and rapid crime scene evidence transportation. And what's Silicon Valley's latest obsession? A robot security guard by the name of K5. Now, this is a glorified Roomba. It patrols a tech campus perimeter in unpredictable patterns. Whistles like a beat cop and wirelessly monitors social media for threats. Now, that doesn't stop burglars, though, so K5 also records everything it sees in 360-degree thermal imaging, night vision, high definition. And if it finds suspicious behavior, it contacts the police. Well, if K5 is Paul Blart, mall cop, then Bumbot is Batman, a vigilante covered in black and extremely creepy. Issues pre-recorded warnings such as you're trespassing, and a high-pressure water cannon is used to disperse homeless vagrants from the area around the bar. Its inventor, Rufus Turrell, built this hulking monolith because he was tired of his old method of terrifying the dispossessed, threatening them with an assault rifle. He claims that the Bumbot has reduced local crime by 50%. Well, maybe so. Let's talk about a bank Robin Hood. In 1924, Charles Arthur Floyd was 20 years old, married and working hard picking cotton in Atkins, Oklahoma. And he became friends with John Hildebrand, a thief who taught Floyd the lucrative business of robbing gas stations and small stores. One of Floyd's theft victims described him to police as a pretty boy with apple cheeks that landed him the nickname Pretty Boy Floyd. He was arrested in 1925 and sent to prison, where he learned a lot more about the crime trade. Got paroled in 1929 and went to Kansas City, where he soon became head of America's most successful gang of bank robbers. With the Great Depression came even more success. Floyd became a criminal philanthropist, tearing up mortgages so that people wouldn't lose their homes, or throwing wads of money to people from the window of one of his many getaway cars. According to some historians, he sent this message to the government: if you ain't gonna do nothing to help the little guy, put him where Floyd will. Well, Floyd had killed more than one police officer during his crime spree, so not everybody considered him such a great hero. In 1933, when four officers were killed in what became known as the Kansas City Massacre, Hoover made Pretty Boy Floyd a prime suspect. Even though historians don't agree on the truth of the FBI charge, and the FBI's never needed evidence to come up with an idea, Floyd was more into making money than murder, and used his gun only in self-defense. And this had been a shootout with no bank money involved. Well, the FBI caught up with Floyd in 1934 and chased him through Ohio for 2 days before they found and killed him. Floyd's body was returned to Oklahoma. Thousands of people attended his funeral, making it the largest in Oklahoma history. Well, when U.S. Representative Michelle Bachmann kicked off her presidential campaign in 2011, she did so from Waterloo, Iowa. And she made the statement, "John Wayne was from Waterloo. That's the kind of spirit that I have, too." Well, there was only one problem with that statement. And this is why you always need to double-check your facts. The John Wayne from Waterloo was John Wayne Gacy, a serial killer who murdered 33 people. John Wayne, the movie star, was from another town on the other side of Iowa. But she didn't want to be bothered with facts. Joshua E. Reed of Rutland, New York, was arrested on theft charges in 2006. And as a condition of his bail, he had to report to the local sheriff's office once a day. One day in November, he realized he didn't have a ride to the sheriff's office. He was going to be late for his meeting, so he stole a car. Rutland police spotted the green 1994 Saab, pulled Reed over, and arrested him. Well, Reed's lawyer said he has a once-daily reporting requirement. As ridiculous as it sounds, he was concerned about reporting on time. He just wasn't thinking. Now, police weren't sympathetic. He was thrown back in jail and wound up facing an additional 12 years in prison. A 20-year-old man in Springfield, Massachusetts courtrooms refused his request to be released without bail after the judge looked at the identification form the man had filled out. Under occupation, he had written drug dealer. Duh. In 2004, 22-year-old Chad Statton was arrested after he attempted to register more than 100 false names into the Defiance County, Ohio voter rolls. Some of the names he used on the forms, and clearly he was a Democrat: Mary Poppins, Jeffrey Dahmer, Janet Jackson, Santa Claus. And they say that vote by mail is not going to be an issue. Well, you've heard the expression, giving him the finger. Mary Bach met a frightful end, but was still able to point out her killer after she died. This took place in Wood County Historical Center Museum, Bowling Green, Ohio. Now, Carl and Mary Bach immigrated from Germany in the mid-1800s and settled in Northwest Ohio. Now, they had, let's call it a volatile relationship, and they fought a lot. So Carl ended up sleeping in the barn. In late 1881, as winter approached, Carl wanted to move back into the house, but Mary refused him. So he armed himself with a corn knife, broke into the house, and killed her. And when she reached up to defend herself, he cut off three of her fingers. Carl turned himself in the next day, and prosecutors used the fingers as evidence at the trial. Carl was convicted and hung shortly after that. The fingers used to convict him were preserved and remained on display at the Wood County Courthouse until the early 1980s, when they were transferred to the Wood County Historical Center and Museum. Today, they're featured in an exhibit that also includes the corn knife used in the murder, Carl's pipe, a German language Bible, the noose used in the hanging, and a ticket to the public execution. You might call this morbid, but it's been an extremely popular exhibit. According to one museum official, those fingers built this museum. And they're not going to let them go anytime soon. 2009, some consumers in Maryland ordered milk online from an Amish ranch in Pennsylvania. The owner of the Amish, I said ranch, it's actually a farm, the ranch is in the west, Daniel Alger, delivered the milk to the people in Maryland. Well, he got busted. Those guys in Maryland that ordered the milk weren't milk drinkers. They were FDA agents. They've been investigating Alger's farm for more than a year. Now, why, you might ask? Well, he was selling raw, unpasteurized milk, which the FDA says shouldn't be consumed in any circumstances that contain dangerous bacteria, and he was transporting it across state lines, which made it illegal interstate commerce. So in April of 2010, U.S. Marshals and FDA inspectors staged a surprise early morning raid on Alger's farm, during which they took pictures and notes. Next day, Alger got a letter from the FDA telling him to stop selling raw milk. He didn't. So they filed suit against him. I would tend to think that was probably entrapment. Well, sometimes you find zero tolerance. Seven fourth-grade boys at Colorado's Dry Creek Elementary School were playing Army in gym class. But because toy guns are not permitted at the school, they pointed their fingers at each other and said, bang. All seven students were suspended for violating the school's weapons policy that included facsimile guns. Now, I've seen stupid rules before, but I think this is pretty close to the top of the list. In 2013, John Welch, a second grade student from Baltimore, Maryland, bit his Pop-Tart into the shape of a mountain. A teacher walking past his lunch table thought it was a gun and freaked out. John insisted it was a mountain. He had drawn one early in art class and was trying to recreate it in his Pop-Tart, but the teacher didn't believe him. So John was suspended for 2 days. His father sued the school district to keep the blemish off his son's record. And what he said to the court was absolutely true. It's just a pastry. Now we've got... I mean, when I was growing up, we had some teachers that clearly had been raised by maiden aunts. They had no sense of humor and would immediately think the worst no matter what the situation was. Well, people like that are best sent off to sell shoes or something important like that. Well, all that having been said, we've come to the end of another show. We'll be back tomorrow evening. And once again, you'll be listening to Ken Hudnall and the Ken Hudnall Show. Until then, y'all have a great evening now, you hear?